The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Courtesy, of course, of CBC. Once again, that was Mark Lee and most of them with Cassie Campbell. But some of us flipped over when we realized the full NBC network was carrying this game with this guy right here in between the benches. Pierre McGuire, how are you?
Excellent, Mitch. How are you doing?
Oh, well, you were right. You knew it. Instant classic. How do you encapsulize what you witnessed last night?
Two teams that really care about one another, two teams that respect one another athletically, and two situations, I think, that I wish they could play a best of seven, because I just think it would help grow the game unbelievably well. It was magical to be there. Both teams poured their hearts into the thing. Somebody had to lose. I had a chance to talk to Tom Rennie right after the game. I was walking to the mix zone to do interviews, and Tom was in the hallway, obviously the president of Hockey Canada. And I said, that was an amazing display for hockey. And he thought I was talking about the shootout, and he said, I didn't like it. And I said, no, I'm not talking about the shootout, Tom. I'm talking about the game. And he said that, oh, the game was phenomenal. And I totally agree with that. I'm with Tom. I wish we could find another way to end the game like that, and I think overtime would be the best way, keep playing overtime, but that's just not the way it goes. I was really happy for both teams. Unfortunately, somebody had to lose.
It appeared from the vantage point of our living room that the Americans took over, right? The Americans, whether it was more talent, more jump, quicker, hungrier, desperate in the third period in overtime, it seemed inevitable that they were going to win it.
Well, they took over in the third period, and they took over because the first 40 minutes, they weren't particularly good. Canada was very good. We showed video evidence of just how wayward the Americans were in terms of their passing, their communication. Their goalie, Matty Rooney, bailed them out. When it was 2-1 in the third period, Canada had an unbelievable scoring chance. Matty Rooney came up with a big save, and then again later on in the third period, the Canes had another chance in a 3-on-1. They misfired. The puck went wide, and that's when they hit Monique Lamoureux with the long breakaway pass off a bad line change, by the way, by the Canadians, and that tied it up. And then it was, you could feel the entire thing change. I think one other thing helped create the intensity level. The Marie-Philippe Poulin hit high and hard on Brianna Decker. I think that really stoked the fires for the Americans. That and not being penalized, by the way, that got them a little bit angry as well.
Yeah, there were some Canadian fans who felt like it was 2002 all over again. Personally, I didn't have an issue with the penalty calls early, but they got a break. Canada got a major break on that one with no call.
Oh, yeah, that very easily in international hockey could have been a five-minute penalty, and that wasn't even penalized. I had a chance, by the way, last night. I was with my wife, Melanie. We went to Canada House and saw a lot of the Canadian women there. And, you know, obviously they were heartbroken, but I had a chance to talk to Marie-Philippe Poulin. If you're Canadian and Quebecois in particular, and you haven't met this person, you should. She is a spectacular human being. Just the way she carries herself, the way she talks about the game, the way she talks about life, the way she interacts with her teammates and with people and the public in particular, a phenomenal, phenomenal ambassador for the sport. Just tremendous, tremendous person.
I mean, this group, I think the girl really put their heart out there, and that's what we did tonight. That's why we wanted to make Canadian proud, and hopefully within, I mean, obviously, that's not what we wanted. That's not the color of the medal we wanted, but we're proud. I think this group is special, like I said, and I'm glad that if it sparked the dream of little girls tonight.
I mean, it's been amazing to be able to put on this jersey and represent Canada. It's an honor every time. Just unfortunate, you know? Work so hard, and just really proud of the girls. We played hard, and we made one little mistake there in the third, which kind of cost us, but when it comes down to shootout, I mean, it could go in anyway, but I'm very proud of not only myself, but the team, and we just got to hold our heads high.
Yeah, we're all proud of them, too. The first voice was Marie-Philippe Poulin talking about influencing young girls in the country. Of course, absolutely. Everybody nodding their heads in agreement on that one. And that was Megan Acosta, who took a year off. She's a cop in Vancouver and one of the best players in the world.
Phenomenal player. And I had a long talk with her earlier in the tournament. You know, I've known Megan a long time, going back to the 05 World Championships in Linköping, Sweden, during the lockout. She's a great player. She loves a puck on her stick. She's just so darn good with it. Her first shootout goal was a thing of beauty, just the way she baited Maddie Rooney. And then her second one, Rooney just got a beat on her and shut it down, which obviously ended the game. I can't say enough good things about her as well. I think she would be spectacular in the media. She's just so well-spoken. She's so knowledgeable in the game. I don't know if she wants to keep playing or not, but if she does, they should let her because she's good enough to keep playing. But she would be awesome in the media. I really believe that.
Pierre, the shots, the close-ups on Maddie Rooney at the age of 20, who could not wipe the smile off her face behind that mask. It wouldn't hide the smile toward the latter stages of the game and the playoff and the shootout and the overtime and the shootout. I mean, I don't know how you could look at that and not think that she kind of knew she was going to win.
Well, she's from a town in Minnesota called Andover. Yesterday was actually Maddie Rooney Day in Andover, Minnesota. She goes to the University of Minnesota. She did all her tutorial work as a young goalie at Rob Stauber's hockey school. That was the head coach for Team USA. And Rob knew, and these are his words, not mine, she was born to be a goalie, which I found interesting because, you know, how do you know until you put somebody in that moment whether they're going to be handling it well or not? And she obviously handled it fantastically well. I don't know if you had a chance to see her interview with me, Mitch, after the game. Oh, my goodness. She's just so cute and so fun and so real. Really, I think that's the biggest thing, just so real. Nothing seemed to bother her. She was unflappable. It was really fun to be around her.
Well, you know, it's an obvious and too easy to jump from one sport across to the other, but I'm sure a lot of us are thinking the same thing. She's 20 years old. Patrick Waugh was this bubbly 20-year-old. He almost like he didn't know how important it was. He was starting to build his career. And then, of course, that wink in overtime 7 years later in L.A. and her smile throughout the overtime and the shootout. I couldn't help but connect the two anyway.
No, but I think that's more than fair. The wink against Thomas Sandstrom, that's one that doesn't go away. Remember that clear as day. Patrick had one of the best lines ever, just give me one goal, boys, and I'll close the door. You know, and he would. He was a man of his word when it came to that stuff. And I don't know what was said. I'm looking forward to it. It's Paul Myers, who used to play for the Canadiens. He was, believe it or not, last year he was the assistant coach at Belmont Hill, where Ryan goes. I'm looking forward to talking to Paul when we get back to North America and just see, you know, what the interaction was behind the scenes with Maddie Rooney and her teammates, because she was so darn confident in the shootout. It was amazing.
When you're dominating a game territorially as much as the Americans were, and yet on the scoreboard it doesn't reflect it, do you have to work to maybe control some frustration, or do you just kind of know that what you're doing is right and eventually it'll happen for you?
I don't know if it was that way last night or yesterday for the Americans. They were very quiet. I sensed trepidation early in the game. They didn't play with the same pace or rhythm. I thought Canada did a phenomenal job of taking them out of it. I made the point during our show, and again, I don't know if anybody heard that, but the point that I was trying to make was that they needed to get more of the Lamoureux on the ice. They needed to get more of Gigi Marvin and Megan Duggan on the ice and Amanda Pelkey. Those are more of the gritty, harder, more physical players that Team USA has. And they were the only ones generating anything on the forecheck. There was really one and done type situations for the Americans, and for whatever reason they weren't addressing it on the bench. Usually people say, come on, we got to get it deep, we got to do this, we got to do that. They were really quiet, I guess is the best way. So there was concern, I'm sure, from their coaches that they didn't have it that day to get more chances on Shannon Sabados, who's just so darn good as a goalie.
With Pierre Maguire in South Korea one more time tomorrow, a reminder that Ray Ferraro will join us just before we wrap up the week on the Olympic front and on Melnick in the afternoon just before 6 tomorrow, along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Some very, very significant injury news out of the camp of the Canadiens today on two fronts.
Back at the right point, Gostisbehere winds up, shoots! Stopped by Price, and that stung him. It got him in the mask. Alzner says, blow the whistle. He does, and Price is slumped over. And he took that one. It appeared right in the mask. Now gets to his feet. As he'll go for a little skate to shake off the cobwebs if he can.
Well, he finished the game, as often happens with goalies. Yesterday, he wasn't around. He took a therapy day. And just moments ago, Mitch.
Yeah, Coach Claude Julien confirming that Carey Price has a concussion and he is sidelined indefinitely.
Yeah, that's not good news for a goalie. That's terrible news for a goalie.
It's like,
I don't know what else to say except this is not good news.
Al Montoya, same situation with Montoya, Pierre, when he stopped the Dustin Byfuglien slapper in Winnipeg, finished the game. He was clearly stung by it, but finished the game, and then didn't play again for the Canadiens.
I don't want to get scary for you, but that's how Mike Richter's career ended in New York. A slap shot from center ice shot the stick of Chris Tamer, who was playing for the Atlanta Thrashers at the time. It was just a routine, shot on goal from center ice, and it hit Richter in the mask, and Mike was never the same, never, ever the same. So, again, I'm not trying to get scary for everybody, but that's another example that, you can't mess around with these things. They're really, it's not good. It's not good at all.
The nightmare season continues to play itself out, and I don't know if you got the statement from the Canadians on this, Pierre, but for those who are just getting into their cars and may have heard that Shea Weber is done for the season, let me read the paragraph that they issued. Following the diagnosis of Shea Weber's injury, it was our belief that after a comprehensive rehabilitation protocol under the guidance of our medical team, Shea would be able to return to play this season. Unfortunately, after extensive efforts to heal Shea's injury, progress has not been made as expected. After further exams and a consultation on Wednesday in Green Bay, Wisconsin, with specialist Dr. Robert Anderson, and with Shea's approval, it's been determined that he should undergo surgery and will be out for the remainder of the season. Our medical group will work with Shea to ensure he is pursuing the best course of treatment moving forward, and we expect him to make a full recovery and be ready for the start of training camp next season. The length of his recovery will be determined following surgery, which will be performed by Dr. Anderson. This is according to the Habs orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Paul Martineau. So it appeared to be headed there, and today it was made official, a torn tendon in that foot that's been bothering him, done for the season.
Yeah, I did get that release earlier this morning here in South Korea. Yeah, that's obviously tough news. You don't want to see anybody having to go through surgery, let alone something that is pretty significant because they don't even put a rehab time on there. So that's clearly, a very major type of surgery on that part of the body. Feel terrible. Not what you expect, especially when you're dealing with somebody as fit and as strong as Shea, but that's, again, that's part of the hard luck of professional sports in particular.
So you're talking about two rocks, two foundation entities for the Canadians, two blue chips, guys that were, no questions about them. You knew they were like blue chip stocks.
Once you put them together, the idea was to seriously compete for Stanley Cup.
And now you're talking about potentially going into next season, September and October of 2018, these guys were supposed to be blue chips. Instead, they could potentially be penny stocks. Like, this is the worst scenario possible.
Well, it's not good, that's for sure. I wouldn't prejudge on anything, though, because you just never know in terms of the concussion. You never know in terms of what the foot situation is. It's obviously, as you're older, as Shea is getting older, it's not great. That's pretty apparent. So it's going to be, to prejudge would be wrong, but it obviously doesn't look great right now. But I think you got to let it play out more than anything else before you really prejudge.
I know, Pierre, when you talked about, and you mentioned this the day the trade was announced on June 29th, 2016, Shane Weber, anybody who's watched him play as a Hab, even through this horrible foot issue that he had, that he tried to play through, is a rock. He's an elite shutdown defenseman who has the ability to also score 20 goals. It may not be the modern idea of your defenseman that most teams might be looking at, but he is among the best defensemen in the NHL still at the age of 32. The problem is, if you're going to make a significant trade, as they did, one for one, position for position, and have that kind of an age difference in the two players, you run the risk of something like this. people seem to take your message the wrong way. But this kind of reinforces it. As unlucky or freaky as this injury might be, there's also a wear and tear issue that, you know, might be part of it. We don't know.
No, you don't know. But that was my concern. My number one concern was the age factor and the term on the deal. It's not just 4 years chronologically. It's four extra years, I believe, too, if I remember correctly, in terms of contract time compared to PK's. So that's why I said what I said. And if you look at the time, the deals that they've made, the substantial deals, the bigger deals, the bigger name deals, every one of them made, even the Drouin deal with Sergachev, every one of them, you were always trading a younger player for an older player. I'm not saying Drouin is old, but he still traded away an 18-year-old, for a 23-year-old. It changes everything. I mean, that's, again, 4 years when you look at it, and it's 4 years on the Weber deal. That's all I was saying. I wasn't trying to make it a big issue, but it's the reality of it. You were making your roster older.
This morning with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Sean Coleman in for Rick Moffitt.
I'm going to throw something out there that, you know, is probably going to rattle some cages. What if Molson is sitting back and saying, all right, Mark, I hear what you're saying. I believe in the direction of you know, your want as general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. But if John Tavares is available, if he goes to market and you don't find a way to land this guy, then you've got a problem. You've got a problem. I got to believe that has to be the bigger plan for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm not saying they're going to get him. You know, I still kind of think that, you know, even though the days continue to drift by and it seems more likely that Tavares tests the open market, if he gets to the open market, I think that has to be the all-in game plan of Marc Bergevin, and that's what Jeff Molson might be counting on.
Pierre, you want to pick up on that? Personally, I don't see that as a plan. That is, you know, you can pick anybody who is plugged in hockey, and they could throw basically a blank check at John Tavares and sign him. I don't know what evaluation has to do with that. They need a lot more than a John Tavares, but if, you know, Darren's throwing it out there, and you can pick up on it.
Well, I think the process then becomes a little bit harder if Josh Bailey, who was very good friends and wingers with John Tavares, he's about to sign a long-term extension with the New York Islanders. And if, in fact, that's true, and I got that very early this morning here over in South Korea, if, in fact, that's true, I think that only loads up the speculation that Tavares will stay with the Islanders if his buddy is signed long-term. So that's an interesting one that Darren threw out there, because usually he and Bobby McKenzie don't put stuff out there unless they have some factual knowledge on it or somebody has shared something with them that would make it more realistic. But I don't know how that would be the prudent way for an ownership group to tell a manager, if you don't get this guy in free agency, then you're not going to be in a stable situation. Free agency is very high-risk gambling. You just never know if you're going to get a player or not. Toronto thought they had Steven Stamkos, lead pipe since that he was coming home. And I kept saying, I was the lone wolf out there, Mitch, if you remember. He's staying in Tampa. And nobody believed that, including the people in Toronto. But he did. So free agency, even though you may think you got it as a done deal, it's not always a done deal. I can tell you, the New York Islanders thought that there was no way Franz Nielsen was leaving New York to go to Detroit. But he did. So free agency is a hard way to gauge a general manager's ability to do his job.
I guess the insecurity for the Islanders fans will remain unless and until he re-signs, because they've made it clear, right, that nothing's happening until the season's over in terms of a new contract.
Right. Well, this is going to be an interesting dance, there's no question, but the fact that they were able to get Josh Bailey to agree to terms, and again, I don't think it's been finalized yet. You would know better than I. I don't think it's been finalized yet, but the fact that they're even talking about that extension, I think that probably, I'm not saying it would, but I think it probably helps them in terms of the Tavares situation with the Islanders.
All right. And finally, just to finish up where Mitch started with the news that I guess it's Antti Niemi starting, right? Did they confirm that it is Niemi with Charlie Lindgren backing him up tonight?
Yes, Niemi will start in
goal. It's going to be a Rangers team without Michael Grabner, without Rick Nash. I don't know if anything else has developed while we've been chatting.
The only other thing is Noah Juulsen will, in fact, make his NHL debut.
All right. So it'll be somewhat easier. It's never easy to make your NHL debut at the Bell Center, but it's somewhat easier if Nash and Grabner aren't playing. What have you heard, and what makes sense in terms of landing spots for those two guys, Pierre?
I can't tell you about landing spots because it's just too fluid on both of them, but I can tell you Grabner's names become hot and heavy. And again, that's just from people contacting me over here from back in North America, people that are affiliated with teams. So his name's become more prominent. I think there's a better chance of him going more quickly than Rick Nash at this point anyways. But I couldn't even begin to tell you a likely landing spot. I think there's a bunch of teams in on Grabner. I'm sure there is on Nash as well, but I just don't know that as well.
All right. What's on your... Okay, I forgot. 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, Canada plays Germany, and before that, it's...